Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. My name is Sarah McDowling and I'm here today with the amazing Randa Abdel Fattah.
Hello, how are you?
I am good, thank you. How are you?
Very well, thanks for having me.
It is a pleasure. It was a pleasure to read your book also. Could you tell us about your new book, When Michael Met Mina?
Yeah, I wrote this book while I was doing my PhD fieldwork looking at racism and Islamophobia in Australia. And I was actually attending an anti-refugee rally at the time, interviewing people. And while I was at this rally, an idea came to me about what it would feel like to grow up as a young, you know, teenage boy in a family where you're hearing this sort of like political rhetoric against refugees and immigration and Muslims and multiculturalism, and how would you sort of develop the courage to stand up for the truth and against your parents. And at the same time, I was thinking of another character, an Afghan refugee girl, and putting those two characters together and really seeing what happens as a result.
Well, this book really, it's so relevant and resonates so well, and it's just such a great moving story. As I was reading it, and I think you can always tell when you've found a good book, when you have this feeling, you're just like, why hasn't this already been written? Like, why hasn't someone already written this? It's just really amazing to me that we're not telling stories like this.
Yeah, I think it's so important, and it's, you know, I really wanted to do something different with, you know, looking at sort of everyday multiculture on the ground, how it actually works, especially among young people, and how, you know, how they're negotiating difference, how they're negotiating what they're hearing in the media, what they're hearing at home, and how that actually translates into people's lives, sort of the trauma that can cause, the long-term repercussions of hatred and racism, because we often think of these things just in abstract terms, but they actually have real-life impact on people's lives and, you know, their life chances, you know, and that's what I really wanted to explore with this book and hopefully really humanise a lot of the rhetoric that we hear in the media.
Well, one thing that really struck me, and we were talking about this before the podcast, and I was so interested in what you said, was that Michael's parents, to give podcast listeners a little bit of sort of framework, Michael in this book, his father runs a party called Aussie Values, which you can imagine from the title everything that is involved. But you mentioned that you had initially had a different kind of idea in mind for his parents, but then you changed it around. Could you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. So Michael the book is narrated by two characters, the alternate voices with each chapter, Michael and Mina. And Michael's growing up in the lower North Shore in Sydney, and his parents have founded a political organisation called Aussie Values, which they see as defending traditional Aussie values. Of course, very hard to define what that is, but they're basically anti-immigration, anti-Islam, anti-refugees. And when I initially wrote the characters, you know, the mother and father, they were a lot more stereotypical sort of caricatures of what we often, you know, frame in the media as, you know, racist bogans, you know, the sort of things that we see in the media that are so easy to dismiss as, oh, that's not me, that's just ignorance. And there's a class dimension to that as well. And so I started to realise that it was going to be too comfortable for my readers to dismiss their rhetoric as something that they've never entertained themselves. So I wanted to make their racism a lot more respectable, the sort of stuff that you would hear, you know, among middle-class liberals who would never ever think that they were racist, you know, because they eat Thai food and have, you know, an Asian friend. So for me, and it was also really looking at their arguments around refugees in particular, and actually dealing head-on with some of the more complex arguments, so that it was actually a lot more challenging for readers to dismiss what they were hearing in Michael's parents.
Which is just something that I thought you did so well, because Michael's parents, I think it would have been so easy to make them the kind of horrific, racist people that no one can relate to, but they're actually quite lovely people, and you do, you really feel that you want Michael's family to remain intact and for them all to survive this shake-up that they go through in the book. Whereas, you know, I just think that there was a really, like, interesting and effective choice to kind of examine that kind of insidious racism that sort of creeps up, as opposed to, like, the in-your-face. Which is not to say that there aren't characters who have...
Yeah.
We have there's Terrence, who is a boy in the school who has some pretty interesting opinions that he seems unwilling to let go of. And there's also, and forgive me, I've forgotten the character's name, but someone in Aussie Values.
Oh, there's several of them, actually.
Yeah.
And also, like with Michael's parents, I wanted to make them likeable just so that people realise that racism can sit very comfortably alongside a nice person, you know, a person who is otherwise... racism, human beings are complex, and it's not a one-dimensional caricature. I mean, that's the point, that you can... Racism is obviously a bad thing, but it can sit in within someone who's, you know, ostensibly a good person. And, you know, with my interviews, with my PhD research, I look at racism from the point of view of people who are against immigration, against Muslims, against refugees. And I would sit and have coffee with them for an hour and a half. And they were quite often very genuinely nice people. And that's the point, that, you know, it's the everyday hidden racism, the subtle racism that we forget about, that we ignore. Yeah. And that is so much more dangerous, and it's so much more insidious, as you said. I met one person who was who inspired a lot of Michael's father, who was a really lovely guy. And, you know, the things he was saying to me were quite horrendous, you know, that they... You know, refugees, they shouldn't come here, and if they die, well, they took the risk, they took the chance. But the way he framed all this was in such common sense language, you know. And at the same time, he was very polite, insisted on paying for my coffee. And, you know, people need to understand that this is how racism works. It can people can reconcile it and still believe that they are decent human beings. And it's about really unpacking that everyday racism that we often ignore.
And I think it really brings home how complex this issue is, because I think it's like you said, you can stop almost any person on the street, regardless how racist their views might be, and ask them if they are racist, and they would say no. Yeah. But and then and that was another thing that kept cropping up in this book that I feel crops up all the time, is that you hear people saying stuff like, "I'm not racist, but." Yada yada, something racist, and then or I no offense, but and then something hugely offensive, and it's like couching it in this language that seems rational, allows people to cling on to these opinions.
Yeah, and sometimes the word racist becomes meaningless because we don't because we're so used to thinking about it in terms of go back home, you wog or. Public transport. So this is the kind of racism that we imagine, the things that get attention in the media. And so in this book, I really, from the point of view of myself as a racialized person who's grown up as a minority with, Australian-born Muslim, Palestinian, Egyptian background. So I've had my fair share of it, you know. So I really wanted to unpack the subtle sort of racial logics that people often in the majority don't understand. So I'll give you an example, which is the book also deals very much with class. Mm-hmm. So Minna is from Auburn, Western Sydney. She gets a scholarship to this school in the lower North Shore where Michael is. And, she's not only come from Afghanistan by boat to Australia, that journey, but, you know, for her, going from Auburn to the lower North Shore feels like she's in another world as well. Yeah. And she's at this... at this school where most of the kids there are quite wealthy and they are taught, you know, they are told they will be the future leaders of this country. You know, they have jobs set out for them, a career path set out for them with their parents. And they are, you know, the middle class, the upper middle class sort of, white Australia. And so privilege is a huge issue in this book. And just, you know, Minna is at one of the art exhibitions at the school, and the pictures there are taken from students who have gone overseas to an African country because, you know, to them Africa is just one country, not a continent, and pictures of them with little, you know, African children, and it's all about them. It's all about them, you know, exploring the world, being charitable, and... most of the people who have gone on this excursion have never been to Western Sydney and would look down on Western Sydney, yet they would go overseas to an exotic country. And I hear this all the time. I mean, I worked as a lawyer for 10 years. Like, I'm drawing a lot on what I've heard and experienced myself. The way that we, you know, frame the third world, the developing world, in relation to, you know, a white privileged world is really something I try and explore in this book, without being didactic, but just really looking at how it plays out even in a high school where, you know, kids in the lower North Shore are taught that the future is theirs for the take, you know, if only they just grab it. Whereas in Auburn, they're in classrooms where there's no heating, where they have to, you know, get tutors. And we don't even think about those class issues and that there is a racial logic to that.
There are a lot of moments like the art show that, yeah. Where Mina's in school, in class, and there's conversations happening, and she's probably the only person in the room who has any experience
yeah.
with this, and her opinions are discounted the most.
Yeah.
And it was just really fascinating to read. It was this book is really great. It's really, really great. I sped through it. It's so many things at once, because to distill the book totally down to an exploration of racism is, I think, to do a disservice, because yeah. it's also really, really strongly about families and the different types of families that yeah. you have. And it's also like a quite adorable romance.
Yeah.
it really offers a little bit of everything.
Yeah.
I want to ask a little bit about your writing process. Mm-hmm. How long did it take you to write this one?
It took about 3 years, sort of the duration of my PhD, actually. Yeah, writing it on the side, but really intensely in the last year, because I wanted to finish it before I finished the thesis. But it took 3 years of writing, redrafting, planning it out. Yeah.
The character development is really amazing, because it feels really authentic. And I think when you tackle these important issues, you run the risk of writing something that seems like it's trying too hard to educate readers.
Yeah.
And that is not the case here at all. This is a story, it's a relevant topical story,
yeah.
but these characters are real and they jump off the page.
Oh, thank you.
And they develop and change in ways that are amazing. So, and it's not a one-sided thing either. So obviously this is a story of Michael, who is raised by a family to have some racist viewpoints, and over the course of this book really changes his opinion.
Yeah.
But it's not simply that. It's also the story of Mina, and she makes some snap judgments about mm-hmm. Michael, and is shown her development through the book is really understanding that people can change
yeah.
and that maybe not everyone, but that, yeah. that some people really can. And there's also, you know, this is a bit of a segue, but like a character that I really found interesting was Nathan, Michael's little brother. There was this one quote that he had at the end of the family are being interviewed. And he just, can you just tell us a bit about Nathan, first of all?
Yeah.
And then I'll get to this quote.
Yeah, sure. Well, Nathan's one of those characters who I started writing without even, you know, he's obviously on the spectrum of Asperger's, but I didn't even think about it when I started writing him. It was more that he was just this this guy who didn't conform. He's young. I think he's 9 or
mm.
yeah. And he just says it as it is, no filter.
Yeah.
And that's really interesting in a family where you're looking at issues of political correctness, where they're so against political correctness, but when it suits them, course, they need to deploy it. And so he always, you know, says things that really expose his parents, he always just is so open and honest and brutally frank about everything. And I liked that contrast, where he was sort of that voice in the family, where he would just say it as it is.
He cuts right down yeah. to the heart of it.
Yeah.
So the quote was, and it was just an amazing moment, I think it's the end of a chapter as well, so it's just kind of laid out there and then you move on with the story, is that they're talking about the conversation is that Muslims are violent, and that's the, like, just Muslims are violent as an idea yeah. and a concept. And then Nathan goes, oh, well, Dad says Muslims are violent, but our bird got run over by a car, and death is everywhere, not just in Iraq.
Yeah.
And I was like, go, Nathan. I thought that he was a really, really interesting character, and that, you know, and that he was in this family where everything is rearing him up to have certain opinions. But
yeah.
just see straight through it.
And even if he even if he's not conscious of yet, even if he doesn't have the maturity to be able to question his parents, his mind is so logical that he brings out the sort of how ridiculous some of their views are by stating the obvious.
Yeah.
And sometimes it embarrasses his parents, and but most times it goes straight over their heads. But it's Michael who's, with his transformation, starts to actually realize that his younger brother seems to get it.
He's got a better view of things. It was fascinating to read Michael's journey, and Mina is just so she's just a bit of a hero, really. Like, some of those speeches that she makes, and she's uncompromising, but also able to sort of admit when she might have been wrong, which I think, you know, it's heroic. She's a hero.
That's lovely.
That she was a hero, and but
it was important for me with Michael and Mina that Michael's transformation, he's not rescued by Mina, and that's really important. And she says it to him, I'm not here to help you sort your racist shit out.
That's one of her good speeches.
She's through with having to guide him through his privilege. He has to get it on his own terms. And that was a really important message for me, because I've gone through my own transformation over the years dealing with racism and having to explain to people the obvious. And I was sort of sick and tired of racialized minorities having to humanize themselves in order to be considered equal. It's sort of like, if you can't recognize my humanity, that's actually not my problem.
I'm not going to deal with you until you do. Yeah.
And that's not to say that she's callous or unsympathetic, although in the beginning she is, and that's her. What, like you said, she has to learn to trust and actually realize that you shouldn't give up on anyone.
Yeah.
But it's also, that was a wake-up call for Michael, and also for Mina, not to step out and try and rescue him and to let him figure it out on his own. And that was really important for me, for her to be able to do that, and for him to realize this is something that he has to do on his own terms.
Well, it would have, I think, undercut the real change that you see in the character of Michael if it had all been about
the girl.
It's not that. She's like a bit of a catalyst, but she's not. He goes through this whole journey by himself, and it's painful because he loves his family, and he has to take a stand against everything that they believe in. And it made me want to ask you a little bit about parenting and family, and how much, to what extent we are shaped by it, and how easy or difficult you think it is, especially at that age, to step away from your whole belief system, basically.
It was so traumatizing to write the last chapters. How was I going to reconcile what seemed to me irreconcilable, which is that Michael has changed and has now fundamentally a different worldview to his parents. And what happens when your faith in your parents, like basic humanity, is completely shattered? Is there anything that you can salvage? And, you know, I wrote and rewrote and wrote and rewrote those chapters over and over, thinking, do I save them? Does he walk away? You know, is there something? And for me, it was really important to show that you can, that there's still something there, that there's still something that can be salvaged, even if, and this isn't just a story about children who differ on their parents in their political views. I mean, there's so many different things that can happen where you know sexual identity, where that puts you against your parents, and you sometimes people do lose their parents because of who they are. And so, you know, because it's a YA book, young adult book, I wanted to end with hope, because I do ultimately have hope that you can transcend those differences and still salvage something. It's not going to be the same, and that's painful for him to realize and for his parents to realize, but there's still something there.
I think the way that you handled that was quite beautiful and really true to life.
Yeah.
It would have been, I don't want to spoil anything, so I'm going to have to say this carefully. I think you chose to go right down the middle there, whereas you could have had a hard break, or you could have had you know, too much of a reconciliation for it to be believable.
Yeah. Life is, we all have families where dinner table conversations are so excruciating, where everyone has such different views, and you just feel, if you weren't family, there's no way I'd be your friend. you know.
That's true. I think everyone's had like that.
You know, uncles, aunts, parents, siblings. But there's still something there. And that's where that ties back in, that you should never give up on anybody, that sometimes it's a little, you know, just, you know, chipping away.
Yeah, and sometimes you have to make that stand with your family on certain issues, but still make it clear that you're still family.
Exactly,
and, there's so many things I wanted to ask you, and we've strayed off, like, I had a list of questions and we've strayed off, so now I just want to come back to another question, which is more sort of about the romance between Michael and Minna. And do you believe in the phrase of opposites attracting, or do you think it's more complicated than that?
Yeah, I think it's a bit more complicated. You need something in common. I do feel as well that of course there's more spark when there is that, you know, there's that opposition, the chemistry of opposition as well.
Well, they seem fascinated by the different worlds that they've come from, and it's part of what draws them together. But then they have, you know, so many common points. Like, they both have a sort of quirky sense of humour, and they're able to. I really liked all the references to certain music and movies in this book.
Like, yeah.
I thought that was really cool. Are those, so the XX?
Yeah. I'm into that sort of indie music and all. But for me, that was... It was, important also to, especially with Minna, like, there's these assumptions about this girl from Auburn as a refugee, and to really give her a strong characterization that broke through a lot of the stereotyping and, gave them something in common that they both are quite surprised that they have in common.
Yeah.
and it seemed, you know, when you're a teenager, music can be your world, and film, and, I mean, so for me that was a really nice way to... give them something to spark that initial attraction.
It was nice to see them both be like amazed that they're in some of the same stuff. So what do you think was the most challenging aspect of writing this book? Like, what did you struggle with the most?
Probably Michael's parents the most.
You nailed that.
lots of writing and rewriting. Striking that balance between. Making sure that they're not caricatures, making them likable, while at the same time really interrogating their racism in a way that wasn't didactic and preachy.
Yeah.
So laying it out there. And also, I suppose, doing that, it was very hard for me to write scenes where they would be spouting this sort of racist vitriol and then I would just have to leave it there. And I would think... but I want to rebut that.
Yeah.
I don't want my reader to go to the next chapter with that hanging in their head. You know, that's when you start to realise I'm not here to preach. You know, I'm here to actually lay out life worlds as they exist in people's minds as true and get the reader to do the thinking on their own for themselves. That's really hard as a writer when you're so passionate about something, but you have to be in a position to have faith that your reader will hopefully take the next step of questioning what they're reading. So there's a lot of faith that you have to put there. That was probably the hardest.
Well, if that was your struggle, you won.
Oh, thank you.
The book is told, I think we mentioned earlier, so you switch viewpoints chapter to chapter. Did you find one character easier to be in their head than the other?
No, they were really both characters who became part of me. And some days I would just write Michael, and that felt very natural. And other days it was just Minna. Some days it was both, and, you know, felt a bit strange. But I felt comfortable in both headspaces.
And I also really thought another thing that was good about the book was that you send Minna off to school, and it could have just been a story about her and Michael, but there are a whole cast of characters that I found really interesting. We mentioned Terrence, who's a bit of a bully.
Yeah.
But some of the real central ideas of this book were really well echoed, I thought, in his character, because he's one of those characters that, and I think we've probably everyone's experienced this, where a friend of theirs is dating someone or obsessed with someone, yeah. and they're a nightmare. And and every time you try and talk to them about them, they're like, "Oh, but you don't know him like I do." Yes. Or, you know, there's another side to him. Or, yeah. But he's really nice, in spite of all that stuff you've just said.
Yeah.
And what do you think it is about some people that they just are able to excuse so much?
Yeah.
When they like someone.
Yeah, it's so true. I mean, with Terrence, I mean, he's Michael's best friend, and. Terrence is a bit of a, you know, he's a bully. He treats girls really badly. He's not a likable character. But you can still see that there's something between him and Michael that is admirable. That's cute. That they've had this friendship for a long time. And again, it's almost. I wanted to show how hard it is. Like, there's so much. It takes courage to stand up for what you believe in when it puts you against people who you feel loyalty towards because you've been friends with them for so long, or because they're your parents. And to me, that was really important, because we all have friends who they say things and you let it go because it's too hard to confront them, because you know that when you do, that friendship will be lost, because you're touching something that's so central to who they are that you've dismissed and ignored for so long, that to exposes sort of the frailty of that relationship. So we do, all of us, make excuses, either vocally or internally. And that's the complexity of human relationships, and that's why racism is so complex to address and why so many people choose not to. So for me, it's about having that, trying to build up that courage in my readers, hopefully young readers particularly. But Terrence, yeah, he does, like I said, echo a lot of those sort of big picture issues. And then there's people like Paula, who I love to write. She's the girl that Mina meets at school, who is just such a nonconformist, and I love writing those sorts of characters. They creep up in all my books. The sort of character that I wish I had been, you know, that sometimes I am and sometimes I'm not, who really doesn't. Well, she does, everyone, you know, she does care what people think, but she doesn't let it change who she is when it comes down, you know, to it. And she's a really important character for me as well.
It's a really, there's not really a wasted character in this book. Like, everyone who jumps up is fully rounded and has a point to be there in the story, I feel like, which makes it a pleasure to read.
Oh, thank you.
It also makes it, it's also a real snapshot in time and in a time and place of Australia, and in particular of Sydney. And the obvious comparison, I think I've heard a lot of people like comparing this book to Looking for Alec Brandy, because I feel like that did the same thing at the time that it was published. It took a real snapshot of Sydney again, and dealt with issues of race.
Yeah.
So I do feel like in a lot of ways they're very different stories, but they do serve that purpose. Like, it's like, here's now, and here's kids, and here's stuff that's happening, and like, let's discuss. And I'm just really excited. I'm excited for kids to be reading this book.
But it was, I think, when I started writing it, you know, Reclaim Australia and all these rallies hadn't started. And it was really interesting for me to see how things escalated throughout the duration of me writing the book. And it was weird. Sometimes I'd be writing a scene and then I would be watching the news that day, and what I was writing about actually happened. So it was very, very surreal and very sobering to realise that so much of what I was writing about was actually relevant and happening now and unfolding and actually getting worse. So, for example, in one of the scenes, you know, something happens to two refugee or asylum seekers who are in community detention and working illegally, you know, something happens to them in the book, and it's actually then, you know, it actually plays out in real life, and you just realise that the line between fiction and reality, when you're talking about these issues, it's very blurred, and that's what I felt, even more weight on my shoulders to try and really give readers a sense of what is happening now in our name.
And
it's not just something you read about in the headlines and forget about. This is actually playing out in people's lives.
And these the stories just aren't, like, again, I don't know if this is because I haven't read them, and yeah. if you know, like, if you have a recommended reading list, by any means, like, pass it on to me, but I just haven't seen in fiction this story being told very often. It's starting to become more, but I just feel like it goes back to what I said before as I was reading this. I'm like, yes, this book, where have you been all my life? Like, why weren't you written ages ago? Like, why do you think that is? That we just, is it too much of a sensitive issue that so many people are scared to go there and write fiction about it?
I don't know. I really don't know. I mean, it's hard to say. A lot of writers, you know, will stick to a certain genre or stick to certain topics that they know are popular. But then there are those who do. There's many who write, especially in Australia. Australia's YA scene is so rich and so... Yes. It's beautiful, actually. It's a beautiful community of YA writers who are all writing really strong stuff. Maybe there is a sensitivity about these issues and about having the authenticity to write about them, which I really respect, because nobody wants someone to come in and write about refugees when... you know, they don't have any experience except a little bit of internet research or visiting a school and doing some interviews. Yeah. It's about having the authenticity to write from that experience. You know, there's some stories I won't tell because I don't feel I have the authenticity and life experience to be able to do them justice.
Yeah.
So maybe there's a bit of that going on, which I respect, actually. I don't want lots of stories about refugees if they're badly told or if they're done in a patronising way either.
That is very true.
Yeah, so yeah. I guess hopefully more voices will come up and emerge that are given some space to be able to write about these issues. It's true, it needs to be. I really believe in the power of fiction more than anything else. I mean, my PhD, you know, took the life out of me to write it, but what, maybe five people will read it?
Well, it's the stories we tell that can have such power to change society.
Exactly.
So the movies and the books that we're reading.
Yeah.
I feel
the arts.
Yes, exactly.
Hear that, Turnbull?
So can I ask what's up next for you?
I really need a break.
A break, okay. Holiday. That's a good idea.
I don't know how, but you know, it's been crazy for me. I mean, I set out to start my PhD. I didn't have in mind that I would be writing a book on the side. I should have done it as part of my PhD. It emerged from the research. And I'm having another baby, so I think you know, we joke that, you know, I will be delivering three babies this year, which is PhD book and an actual baby.
So, wow.
But my hope is to get into academia, and I'm sure, like I always say, I'm taking a break from writing, but I can't, something happens, and that's for me sort of my bread, that for me makes it all worthwhile. I love writing, and I always gravitate to fiction. And I'm sure another story will emerge. So,
I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Rhonda, thank you so much for coming in today. It's been so great to talk to you.
Oh, thank you. It was a pleasure.
And it was so great to read When Michael Met Mina.
Thank you.
Podcast listeners, Rhonda's new book, When Michael Met Mina, is available from Booktopia now.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.